This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, I'm Philip C and this is The Breakfast Grill. Malaysia is a leader in the e-wallet space, with more than 40% of its users having at least one. Be it to buy food, groceries, to bill payments, mobile payment solutions are now part and parcel of our day-to-day life. But with more than 40 e-wallets, this is a crowded and vicious space, as each player aggressively pushes to buy market share. So how will Faith, one of the pioneers, navigate these choppy waters? And will its recent plans to expand to India succeed? Today on The Breakfast Grill, we have Joel Neo, the CEO and co-founder of Faith. Welcome to The Breakfast Grill, Joel. Now, before we talk about Faith, let's go back in time, because you started at Says, moved to Groupon, and then moved to KFit. At what point did you decide that these endeavors were not working and decided to repivot?
Yeah, so I think the journey first started at least in 2015. Our first business model then was a fitness platform, allowing consumers to book like hundreds of different gyms for just a single fixed fee. What we realized 8 months into it is that the profitability of that business model was quite challenging. Our heaviest users were, actually using, I mean, they loved the platform. They used it, very frequently, but we're unable to, make the unit economics, right, or the profitability work. So 8 months in, we had a great team. We had great investors on board. We just raised our Series A funding of $12 million. And there was two options. One option was to return the money to the investors. The other option was to take the team, take the money, and to pivot, as you mentioned. So we looked at the space. We saw the amount of work that our team has been putting into to build a platform for offline merchants. So while we started with gyms and studios, we saw that opportunity to expand that to restaurants, retailers, salons. So we took that path, and in 2016, July, that's when we kicked off Faith, right, and launched a product.
Groupon to KFit makes a lot of sense. You're kind of doing this subscription kind of move, but when you move from KFit to Faith, you had this Faith deals, but now your larger component is Faith Pay. How much transition effort was required to move from KFit to Faith?
Oh, it was tremendous, actually. So it was a complete shift of model. In fact, we had probably 1/3 of our team at that point in time leave us. You know, they joined the organization for, the mission of democratizing fitness. We had very honest chats with our team. Tough times, but glad, we kind of sailed through that, and we've managed to build one of the largest mobile wallets in the region.
Go back to an interview you did previously on BFM, and you said there were two types of entrepreneurs. One entrepreneur that was fixated with the bottom line, and the other one that's in your wheelhouse, someone driven by passion and ideas. And you were mentioning just now that KFit was just not profitable. How do you reconcile that passion and ideas with the sustainability of running a business now at Faith?
Oh, absolutely. So, sustainable growth, I think, is what we all kind of strive for. So, of course, in the early stage, we start with an idea, a problem that we want to solve. But within 6 to 12 months, typically, you get a sense whether it's able to grow sustainably. And at that point of time, it was hard to see how that was going to work. And therefore, pivots, or sometimes different startups, they would kind of adjust the business model, or they would add on different products to it, or try to figure out different monetization models. So for us, it was, I think it's that process of discovery, but definitely in the long run, building a sustainable model is pretty important.
So we now come forward to the discussion on mobile payments and mobile wallets. And, for me, one of the things I respect for you for is that you are clearly one of the pioneers in mobile payments and mobile wallets in Malaysia. As you said, 2016, I think there were only 2-3 of you guys in the market. But what struck me is that if you look at your presence now, your presence is only 8% market share. Is that what you intended to do? What happened throughout the whole process?
Yeah, so we had a very different reception, or somewhat different competitive landscape in the various markets. So today we are in Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia, and we're going to be launching in India sometime this quarter, in the next 1-2 months. So as what you mentioned, Malaysia, yeah, slightly under 10%. You know, we have quite an active user base there, right? A couple hundred thousand that would transact every month. We have a set of about 20,000 merchants, you know, that uses the, you know, FavePay as a payment option, preferred in a way where they can actually issue cash back to the consumers. I think we are very early on in this development. So I'll say, like, if I think of it as a marathon of 42 kilometers, we are probably in maybe the fourth or fifth kilometer. Yeah. So, so while we see the kind of explosion, right, in mobile payment space,
yes,
in the past few years, actually the growth in Malaysia itself is expected to you know, to be at least 5 to 10-fold, right, in the coming years. So yeah, so I say early on, you know, we're happy to have a seat on the table, right, in Malaysia. However, in Singapore, which is the other market that we rolled out in 2017. We are actually about 25-30% market share. You know, we are actually the number two preferred mobile payment solution there. Yeah, and we are expected to grow, you know, fivefold over the next, you know, coming years by actually an external research report. So different, I guess, different fates or different destinies in different markets. But we're glad to have a seat on the table in both Singapore and Malaysia in this industry.
Do you think the issue in Malaysia is that you have competitors with very deep wallets? They're just buying market share unsustainably.
Yeah, I think in the past couple of years, you'll see different folks putting in or investing different amounts of money. And everyone seems to take turns to do it. So I think it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's good for consumers. It's good for merchants. In fact, oftentimes when I look at an inception of an industry, it tends to die off if there's not enough funding, right? Because, you know, while it may seem that wallets are competing against one another, but actually it's closer to the wallets are actually trying to build industry together, right? So it's just different points. There'll be different, you know, percentages of market share. But end of the day is, you know, it's actually building value for consumers and merchants, right? To want to move out from cash.
Yeah. But how do you differentiate yourselves from all these big players?
Oh, absolutely. So when we first started, so a little bit of history in 2016, you can only use credit cards with Fave. Yeah. And then in 2018-19, we introduced Boost as a payment option in Fave, and that picked up quite well. And just last year, we so, you know, while, you know, consumers have that choice to use whether it's GrabPay or FavePay, you know, there is actually a very strong partnership between Fave and Grab, where both in Singapore and Malaysia, you can link your GrabPay account into Fave and you can earn Grab points, and you can also earn the Fave cashback or the merchant cashback through the app. So that's where you, you know, at some point, I guess there's competition, but there's also a lot of collaboration in the industry. The bigger enemy that oftentimes we are trying to compete against is the cost of funds, which is typically how much does it cost to operate you know, a reloading, right?
Yeah, your cashbacks.
Yes, the cashbacks, that's that's number two, right? And merchant and consumer education and adoption, right? So, yeah, I'd say that competition is there, but there are a lot of ways at the back that collaboration is also happening within different players.
But in your mind, right, as you said, you know, you're one of those unique wallets that work with even your competitors. So there's this really interesting mix of competition and collaboration. Are you afraid that these players, when they hit scale or relevance, they'll just dump you?
Well, I think it's too early to tell. Yeah. So, you know, it's a question of, you know, maybe somewhere in the 25th kilometer of this marathon, what's happens. But there's actually a lot of room for growth. And, you know, particularly in this space, it hasn't come to a point where it's crowded in a way where, you know, the different payment options are competing like neck to neck. And that's where you see actually innovation is taking the lead in this space. So whether is it, you know, at some point we'll talk about probably buy now, pay later. Yeah, we talk about, you know, financing, insurance. Yeah, all these different kind of products are, you know, going to kick in. Because essentially, in the longer run, I think wallets, as most of them are lining up themselves towards getting digital banking license, are trying to compete with the old, you know, architecture of banking, right? And cash. So it's actually a huge industry to get into. It's still early to tell. Yeah.
Because the competitor might not actually be GrabPay, but the banks with QRPay and Maybank, because they have the database, they have the portfolio of the customer to see the transactions, right? Are you more worried about them versus those startup payment wallets?
Yeah, so there are a lot of folks in this space. And actually in Malaysia, I think the banks have done a phenomenal job, you know, especially like Maybank, you know, CIMB, staying ahead of the curve. You know, I particularly use these two banks and their apps. Yeah, and the consumer experience is awesome. So if you were to ask the other wallets who are, you know, their benchmark, oftentimes the Malaysian banks actually come to play. Yep. And it's a good thing, right? Versus, you know, oftentimes companies or startups will say that, oh, you know, like global companies are a benchmark. But yeah, the Malaysian banks are getting a run for their money. But I think that they're also doing quite a good job.
Yeah, but one thing that differentiates you, I remember in the past, is that one of the things you do is you're quite merchant-centric. And you were saying just now you had 20,000 merchants. I would think that in this time of COVID, someone like Faith and yourselves would be acquiring merchants left, right, center, because everybody wants to get onto a payment platform since you can't do transactions face-to-face now. Can you just give us a sense, how was 2020 and 2021 for you during this pandemic in terms of performance of Faith?
So I'll say there's two sets of merchants. One is the offline retailers, and the second is the online e-commerce type of merchants. So firstly, the online e-commerce merchants have had a really great opportunity in the past 18 months where consumers, you know, we were somewhat binded to our homes and, you know, we needed products or services coming to us. So there's been a great growth in that segment. And actually in the past 12 months as well, we've started to build products in that segment to work with e-commerce companies. For the offline segment, yes, you're right. In the first 3 to 6 months, we had a lot of incoming requests from merchants to come on board, mainly to accept cashless payment options, because cash is not an option for a lot of these merchants to receive payments from consumers because of the risk, right? And also the hassle in depositing this cash at the end of the day, so on and so forth. So cashless has definitely taken gotten a big tailwind in this space. However, I think there's a lethargy between, you know, for this offline retail segment, because we're probably close to 18 months, right, you know, in this lockdown. And a lot of merchants that we work with typically are smaller, medium-sized offline retailers. It's going to be tough, yeah, or it has been tough. Mm. And it's going to be tough for them to come back. So I think this is a space that, you know, we try to help where we can. But it is something that we are quite concerned about, especially with, you know, more EMCOs or MCOs, you know, where businesses can't open and consumers can't move freely. We understand, right, where this is coming from on a health or government perspective, but this industry is definitely impacted. Specifically in Malaysia, we see huge growth in e-commerce. During lockdowns, we can see volumes drop 60-70%. And typically when the lockdowns end and, you know, consumers can kind of move, there's actually a spike up, you know, consumers are, you know, spending and going out, so on and so forth. So, yeah.
How does this translate to financial numbers? You know, we were looking at your filings 2019. Tough year for you in 2019. Your losses were greater than your revenue. So what was 2020 like?
Actually, 2020 and 21, you know, it's not something that we are proud to go out and say, hey, you know, we've been growing, right, in the midst of pandemic where a lot of our merchants are impacted. Fundamentally, you know, we received a funding round in July last year and we, you know, closed up on an acquisition in April. Actually, for us, because of the tailwind on cashless, we've actually been growing, right, in the past 18 months. Revenues has been also accelerating. Losses has been reduced. In fact, we had profitable months already towards end of last year.
So give us a sense of numbers. So like what was the revenue growth? What was the profit loss narrowing?
Yeah. So so if you look at it year on year, right now, this year, we are probably growing about, you know, 30 to 50% year on year.
On revenue?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, on volumes. And in terms of losses, you know, we've actually reduced that probably about 50 to 70%. And hitting profitable months, last year, November and December.
What's the prognosis for 21, 22? Do you foresee yourself breaking even and profitable then this year or next year?
I think for specifically Southeast Asia, like Singapore, you know, we are doing pretty well, profitable and growing. So I think we'll want to continue that path. Mm. In Malaysia, at about slightly under 10% market share, we look to invest further, especially once MCO ends. And we've got one or two key e-wallet players that's going to also come on board. So we expect year 22 to actually be a huge investment year for us for Malaysia. And we're going to launch in India. So that's another country where we're going to be investing heavily. So I think it's a different mix in different countries.
And we'll talk about India shortly. On The Breakfast Grill today, we speak to Joel Neal, CEO and co-founder of Faith. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back. On The Breakfast Grill today, we have Joel Neo, the CEO and co-founder of Faith. So I want to just talk to you about India, because you're in where Pine Labs bought Fave. Give us a sense of the Indian expansion plan.
Yeah, so a bit of context about Pine Labs. They're one of the very underrated, right, Indian fintech unicorns there. So where they actually do, they're one of the biggest payments company. So from the likes of McDonald's, Burger King, Pizza Hut, right? And all these big brands are using the payment services to process essentially cashless payments, cards or QR in India. So when they approached us sometime early last year in the midst of the pandemic, you know, we were actually stoked to explore the opportunity with them. So what they really liked about what we do is, you know, the mobile payment experience for consumers in Southeast Asia, and they wanted to see that coming to India. And I guess for a Southeast Asian company and a company that actually started in Malaysia, it's a stretch to say that we're going to launch our consumer platform in India. Rarely anyone kind of takes that step, right? In fact, not many Southeast Asian or Malaysian companies go to India and have been wildly successful. Because it's a very competitive market. But together with Pine Labs, right, and through the acquisition, we're going to be launching that next month. Yeah, and some of the brands that I just mentioned are going to be live on the Fave platform, you know, for consumers to transact in India, the largest consumer economy, right, that's growing. So
is this a copy-paste model from Malaysia, Singapore, Indonesia? What tweaks are you going to make?
Oh, there's actually a lot of tweaks that we have made. So at the back of it, the mission of Fave in India is very similar. It's about rewarding the consumer and providing them flexible payment options. But at the front of it, it's very different. So first and foremost is India is actually one of the largest QR payments, you know, country in the world, and the fastest growing one too, right? So so every merchant in India already has a QR code to accept payments. There's a national QR code called UPI, and that's been distributed over the past couple of years to every single offline merchant.
And have you secured the certification for that?
That's a great question. You know, we've actually taken almost a year to get that, and we're almost at the closing stages. So, you know, in the next
month. Why is it so difficult to get that certification?
So generally, I think working with regulators is not necessarily the fastest process. So, you know, I think startups can, you know, build an app in 3 months, get it live and to consumers, right, within 6 months. But working with regulators, you know, requires time. I think a lot of back and forth and, you know, a lot of trying to understand the business model, the platform. So, but I'll say it's been, you know, it's fairly okay, right? A tedious process, but you know, it's no different to working regulators, you know, in Southeast Asia or in Malaysia.
Well, talking about a product that has had some regulatory scrutiny, that's BNPL, which is Buy Now, Pay Later. You've launched a Fave Now, Pay Later. Can you give us a sense of the product and what does it mean to the bottom line of the business?
So I think the starting point of this product in Fave's view is that over the past couple of years, we have helped merchants to create their own loyalty program, so their own cashback for consumers. So for instance, you know, today you could go to Subway in Singapore, right? And then you could you know, pay and you will get 5% cashback from Subway. And you can try it out in Malaysia as well. There's another 20,000 places that you can use it once MCO ends. Now, when we looked at BNPL, we thought this is an interesting way for merchants to develop a credit relationship directly with their consumers. So if you think about consumers today, our credit relationships oftentimes is with the bank directly, right? So whether it's in a form of a credit card or in the form of a loan. And why this model is growing very rapidly is because consumers are not financing this credit. It's actually the merchants that are starting to finance this credit. And therefore, for a consumer, to a large extent, it's a very easy way for them to manage their finances. So if you want to buy something that's 1,000 ringgit, you only need to pay 333 ringgit first, and then the rest of it, you know, in the next 2 or 3 months. And all of this is funded by the merchants, right? Because they are incentivized to get the users to convert to the sale. So I think that's something we thought it's kind of up our alley, which is helping to deepen that relationship between the merchant and the consumer.
It works if the transaction is 1,000 ringgit or more, but most of your transactions are presumably under 100 ringgit, no?
Actually, we have two very large sectors or segments that consumers use Fave for. One is F&B and the other is retail. So, you know, we're actually in most of the major electronics and retail stores in which transactions are by hundreds or thousands. We're one of the preferred payment methods back then. We had Home Deck, for example, when exhibitions, right, were still open. Yeah, we were one of the most popular payments there. So, while there's high frequency, low transaction values, we also have very high transaction values that happens on our platform.
But are you worried that, unlike a Fave in its inception, you were a pioneer, BNPL isn't new anymore. It's actually a very crowded market. Everyone's offering it. And now with the large BMS like Klarna, Affirm, and even Apple is entering the market, do you feel that this product really is a differentiator for you?
Yeah, actually, I think that this product is even earlier. So in that marathon of 42 kilometers, this is probably the second kilometer. So, probably earlier than e-wallets and cashless payments. And this product can only be built on the adoption of cashless payments, right, or mobile payments. And that's why, it's kind of exploding all over the world. In fact, Southeast Asia, I would say, it's a fast, follower of this space. In the US and Europe, this has actually grown in the past 2 years to become one of the most preferred method of payments, especially for the millennials and the Gen Z group. They actually find this payment method transparent, easy to understand. It's simple to get, the credit.
Well, I want to just talk about your financing and fundraising, because as you said just now, your acquisition by PineLab gave you a valuation of $45 million. But what struck me was that in your earlier rounds of fundraising, I think notably one in 2018, the valuation came in at $74 million. Why was there a drop in the valuation?
So to get some context as well, in total the company has raised about $30 million, right? So the exit was at $45 million. Mm-hmm. So there were investors who came in at a later stage that would have to get a bit of a trim in terms of how much they've invested and how much they get out of it. But overall, on the net basis, is that generally everyone's on a positive return, right, of this exit. It's not a wildly profitable right exit for most investors. I think, having an acquisition happen at a time of a pandemic, is never easy, right? We think that, because all our investors also had to accept, right, kind of, the deal in April. And it was a fairly a good one, I guess, for most investors.
So Sequoia, Axiata Digital.
Everyone's cashed out.
Everyone's cashed out. So you said small return. Give us a sense of what kind of ROI they had.
Oh, yeah. So some of the early investors will probably get 2 to 3 times, right, their investment. Mm. And then the mid-stage ones, probably about, anywhere 20-50%. And then the later stage ones, that's where they get the one or two, that's where they'll get a trim, right?
So $45 million, is that enough, really?
$45 million for the acquisition, right?
But is that enough for your future expansion plans?
So that is actually not inclusive of the funding towards Fave for the future. So PineLabs actually just raised a $600 million round. Yeah. Yeah, and a portion of that is going to go into growing Fave further. Yeah.
Would you IPO?
Yes. So that's in the process. So timeline-wise, it's actually public information, right? That, it's already discussions. And it is IPO season, right?
Yes, it is.
All over, right? And you see specs, so becoming another hot topic. Probably there's one too many specs out there as well. Mm-hmm. And not enough good companies to take IPO. So, I think that you'll see a lot of it happening next year.
So a very distinct possibility in the next 12 months then.
Mm. Yep, I think it's 2022.
Joel, thank you for your time. On The Breakfast Grill today, we speak to Joel Neo, CEO and co-founder of Fave. I'm Philip C, and this is The Breakfast Grill, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.